Pull up a chair, the stories begin. Patrick and Randy are letting you in. From the desert lights where the big names are, it's Big Conversations, Little Bar.
Welcome to Big Conversations, Little Bar, the Coachella Valley's favorite podcast, recorded live at Skip Page's Little Bar in Palm Desert. Get ready for another fascinating hour of meeting people who make the desert city such a spectacular place to be. Now, nestled in their corner booth perch, well lubricated and raring to chat, here's Patrick Evans and Randy Florence.
Thank you. That is Howard Hoffman introducing us today. Is that right? It's Howard Hoffman, isn't it?
I don't know what his name is today.
It's Howard.
Is it the same guy?
Yeah, it's the
same
guy.
Then it's Howard Hoffman.
It's Howard.
Yeah.
Ho-ho, as we like to call it.
Ho-ho.
I'm Patrick Evans, and you're listening to... You're the ding-dong.
Oh.
He's the ho-ho.
Okay.
That's Randy Flores, my co-host. You're listening to Big Conversations, Little Bar. We're back here in the corner booth at Skip Page's Little Bar in Palm Desert, California, taking up the most expensive real estate in the bar. I know Skip appreciates
it. It's got to be today because we're not spending any money.
No, we're costing them money, we usually do. Randy, how are you?
I'm great. I'm Randy Florence, your co-host.
Yes, I recognized you from your mugshot. We're delighted to have you back this week.
I'm glad to be back this week. I noticed that there's a younger gentleman sitting next to you, which always makes me a little suspicious that you're looking for a younger co-host.
That's Leo. He just came to observe. He's just watching.
Okay. I'm watching you, Leo.
Now you made Randy nervous. He's looking over his shoulder.
Hey, so what's going on in town? I know when we first started talking, you just said you haven't had a day off in a long time.
True. Oh, man. It started with, it was a very ease into it. I helped judge a car show at Sun City. Took my bride. She really enjoyed that. She got to see some classic cars.
Really?
But then the next day, it was Animal Samaritans, the tree lighting at the top of the Palm Springs Aerial Tramway with Lance Bass.
Yes. Oh, I'm so sorry we missed that. That would have been really cool.
I cornered Lance and I said, we really want you on the podcast. And he was like, oh, yeah, absolutely. And I'll get back to you on that. Still, he's not our guest today.
He's not our guest today.
But we have better. No, it's just that time of year. But we're going to hit a lull here. Obviously, by the time folks hear this, it will be post-holidays. But what are you guys doing for the holidays?
We're going up to see my son and our theater kid granddaughters.
Oh, that's right. How old are they?
14.
14.
They are part of the School of Rock program, and I just heard a new song. My granddaughter sang a song from the Arctic Monkeys, which I know is one of your favorite bands.
I have all of their albums.
And apparently there's some new musical that they're trying out for next week, so
phenomenal.
I'm very excited about it.
Speaking of theater, we have one of the great theater people in our Coachella Valley.
But I'm really nervous. This may be the foremost expert on improv in the Valley.
Oh, 100%.
And I think improvisationally...
So far you're doing great.
I think... I can't pronounce improvisation. I think we're pretty good at it.
That's why they just call it improv.
Yeah, but I'm really nervous about doing it.
People often fuck that up.
In front of her. You can say fuck, by the way.
I just did. So feel free.
Fuck.
This is Melanie Blue, who... Full disclosure, was our improv instructor. We both took... You dropped out.
You dropped out.
I was asked.
What was it? Tim Leary, drop in, drop out, tune in, tune out.
I got too high before the class.
And you did acid. And
they
that
told
was,
me it moved to a new location.
We did. Yeah. Quick, Randy's coming. Let's go to the other room. Melanie, thanks for coming
Welcome.
In.
Welcome.
Hello.
I want to tell you, yes, Anne, your improv class, I dabbled in acting like in high school and even in college. I work in a performance medium, obviously, but it's not acting. It was really eye-opening. It was amazing. You are so good at walking people through. Because I think people walk in with the expectation that improv is just like you see on Whose Line Is It Anyway? And it is so much more and so much more complicated than that. But you break it down. You're a really outstanding teacher. She's speechless.
We've never had an 8-minute podcast.
Wow. Leo, you're up next. Well, we're going to have to recruit a guest.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Patrick.
Didn't mean to make you swoon. I mean, seriously, I really so enjoyed that.
I'm going to cry.
No, don't cry.
I'm going to cry.
Our producer tells us if we can make people cry on this, it's gold.
Okay.
Oh, we did it right
you
up front.
Yes. John's going to be so proud of us when he hears the recording.
It's one of the things I'm most proud of, so thank you. Falling into acting, teaching improv, falling into being a teacher. And you say I do it so well.
You do.
You're incredible at it. It was
you
so...
You gave it two classes.
It was... But those two classes, I felt so safe.
He learned so much in two classes, he couldn't come
that
back to
the... That was the point of taking a third class.
That's right.
No, see, that's the problem. The other people that I suspect that go to improv classes is guys like me who say, oh, I make people laugh all the time. And then they come in and they try to spend the first 15 minutes... reciting everything that they've ever said that made anybody laugh.
Yes, regurgitating Randy.
And people...
She remembered.
Of course I remember.
Oh, my goodness. That is an inside joke, but when you arrive at the class, you have to come up with a nickname, and it has to be a word that starts with the same letter as your name. So regurgitating Randy is what Randy came up with.
And you were...
panicked.
Yeah.
I'm pissed off.
Pissed off, Patrick. First
but the
one
first
was
one
panic.
Was
panic. Patrick.
Which was so honest.
The one thing, I was panicked, and I'll tell you what really panicked me about the class. I was really excited to take it, but I walked in, and I knew Randy was going to be there. But there were a lot of other people that I knew. And that threw me off, because I thought, I'm going to this place where I won't know anybody, and I can just be crazy and do whatever. And then all of a sudden, I see people I know. I'm like, I have to see these people outside of this class. So I was panicked.
First of all, you ever walking into any room in the Valley and thinking you're going to be anonymous just cracks me up. Don't ever walk through the Acrisure Arena with this guy.
Ooh, fun.
It'll be an hour and a half before you get to your seats.
Fun.
By the time we got to the seats, the hockey game was over.
It was over,
okay.
And nobody had scored.
Yeah, that's true.
So I'm very surprised by that.
And second class and new people there, too. But you've gotten more comfortable in the class just coming to all the new ones. And then people fall in love with you, and then you have to leave. And everyone's, what happened to Patrick?
No.
Sunday claims you, Monday claims you, whatever class I start in February is going to claim you.
No,
Patrick's
I'm
going to
be there.
Class.
I'm going to be there.
Nobody asked where Randy was. But
not a person.
No, everybody asked.
We're so glad we don't have to hear regurgitating.
That one person that you were giving a ride to kept asking, where is Randy?
I told my wife she's got her own car.
I'm sorry.
I think we were going the same
place.
We're
going the same place. So I know that you said you fell into acting, but tell me specifically about the improv background that you have. And because you obviously fell in love. It's a different form of acting. You fell in love with enough to not only continue to do it, but to teach it.
Do you have stuff on your notes about where that happened? You do?
I just want to see if you tell the truth.
Okay, fantastic.
And by the way,
yes.
Do you consider improv acting?
Yes.
Okay, I just
so
want to make
sure.
So
my core belief is that improv makes better humans. But I believe actors make better improvisers, and improvisers make better actors. And there's a unity in between the two, where, as I teach in my class, it's not just the superficial joke. It's going deep and going honest, finding the character and the reality, and that's where the humor comes from. And so many actors are terrified of improv. They're like, I don't know what to do if I don't have a script telling me what to do. And so many improvisers are terrified of acting, like, I don't know what to do if I have a script. So there's this bridge in between, where I tell every actor, you've improvised, we've all been there. When the other actor forgets their lines, when the set falls, when your wig falls off, you have to improvise through that moment and stay true to your character, the reality of the situation, and the playwright. And it's the same for improv. I think improvisers without acting experience stay in a two-dimensional place, stay in a superficial, stand around making jokes thing. But when you can really breathe life into a character and allow it to exist on stage in a space. And that's what I try to teach foremost in my class.
And you do a great job of it. What came first for you, acting or improv?
So I was in college. I have such trouble recalling my life. I'm dying to know
Sarah Lawrence,
on your favorite.
You went to college
Thank
at Sarah
you.
Lawrence.
That's funny. I went to college.
Why don't you two interview me?
With Sarah Lawrence.
With Sarah Lawrence.
Yes, she's terrific.
Sharon Lawrence is going to be on the show in a couple
of
weeks.
That's going to be fun, too.
Oh, that's fantastic. I saw that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
But let's get back to you.
To me.
Sarah Lawrence.
Sharon Lawrence wasn't there. But we did have a lot of famous alumni. I was in the acting program because I got kicked out of an art history class. So it's something I had always wanted to do my entire life, but was scared to say.
There's a story, isn't there?
How did you get kicked out of an art history
class? That's a class people take so they can just skate through it.
That took some effort.
Congratulations. You're the first one.
Let's just backtrack, shall we? This is why I'm so bad at interviews. I never know where, what drawer to open of my life. There's so many a splendid, right? You agree, Leo?
Oh, no. I was just saying you're doing great.
Like, thank you, Leo. I got affirmation from your replacement.
Thank you.
Woo! I will be on again.
I got
again.
Replaced by my affirmer.
But I've always felt like an actress inside. I used to, when I was a little girl, follow my cat around. I would try to be a cat, and I had this little book of monologues, and then whenever my friends came over, what do you want to play? I'd be like, let's do monologues. But I was so scared. I didn't understand that to take a class meant that you got to know nothing. So I thought, I already have to be an actress to say I'm an actress to take a class in school, because all those people are like real actors and they're like really good at it. And I don't know. So I got scared, and I had a chance to go into the Academy of Arts in Chicago, which is, I had a chance because I was kicked out of every other school I've ever been to in Chicago. And that was the only one left to take me. Yeah. And
you might be the least educated person that we, besides me, that we've ever had on the show.
I am.
She finished.
She went. She
just
finished
got
a
kicked
whole
out
bunch
of a lot
schools.
Of them first.
I got to finish out the year in every single one, but I'd say I'm well-rounded because I've done public, private, Catholic, and boarding school.
All
and
training.
Landed at the Academy of Arts, where everyone figured out, she's an artist. And I was terrified to do the acting audition. So I went out and I made an art portfolio and just created 5 paintings, charcoals, watercolors, put it in a portfolio and submitted and got into the art program.
Wow.
And this was all me running from being an actress. So cut to college, Sarah Lawrence. I was really into art history. I was going to do art history at Sarah Lawrence. I don't know if you research this. It's a very special school in the sense that you don't major. And every class you take is very intensive. So you have to interview the teacher to get into the class. So you can only take 3 classes and you do that study and then your own independent study. So for example, I took a religion class, and in my independent studies, I studied cultism and wrote my own Bible. So you do your independent program on top of your class. And that's why the teacher wants to interview you and figure out. There was a really long line at that teacher's interview.
That's a clue.
Mr. Gould, it was East versus West, Eastern and West art. And I just thought, screw it, I'm just gonna sign up for the class. And I had been there about 2 weeks. I had asked a few questions. He was a very intense man. And he looked at me when I was asking what I think he thought was a pretty dumb question. And he said, I don't remember interviewing you.
Ooh.
And I was like, oh, you can't be in this class.
Oh, was I supposed to do that?
I was like, oops, I'm new. I've just started. I don't. He's no, you cannot be in this class. The only class available to me, the only programming that was still available was the theater program.
Wow.
It was like the universe was like, what are you doing? No, you belong here.
But you had to interview with that professor.
No, they took me. They take anyone. Theater.
Believe me.
You said about 5 different things that make me want to go back even further. I want to figure out how you got to St. Lawrence.
Sarah Lawrence.
St. Lawrence. How you got to Sharon Lawrence's house.
That's next week.
So Sarah Lawrence, born right around that area?
No, Chicago, born and raised.
Okay. Big family?
Big family, did you ask?
Did you have a big family?
Did I have a big family?
How big was your family?
How big was my family, you ask?
Not their weight, like how many of them?
Yes, and?
Thank you for clarifying.
Yeah, just, Randy asked confusing questions.
They all make sense in my mind.
I didn't get into University of Wisconsin-Madison, which was my whole plan. I was going to go to University of Wisconsin-Madison, marry Tommy Ford, and start my life. And
wait, who's Tommy Ford?
Yeah.
No, we've still gone too far.
No, who's Tommy Ford?
We're going to get there. Why was the plan that you were going to University of Wisconsin?
Because she had to marry Tommy Ford.
Was that what your parents wanted you to do?
No.
They did not like Tommy.
My mom was fond of him, but he was much older than me. Yeah, no, the universe really puts you exactly where you need to be. Honestly, I think Sarah Lawrence was the only place that accepted me. It's where I was meant to be. Big family. I have two older sisters and a mom and a dad.
Anybody in theater?
My mom is very theatrical.
There you go. I'm trying to figure out, where'd you get it? Where did that come from?
Chicago's a wonderful theatrical community, and they have taken me to Second City, Goodman Theater, Steppenwolf. They loved theater. I was raised watching theater and watching my mom be a very melodramatic, beautiful human being. And yeah, I think it came from that. We were raised, interestingly enough, side plug, doing a play, Georgia O'Keeffe, who was also, I'm just learning, raised fiercely independently. So when my mom decided that she wanted us to be able to totally be independent and not need her at all, she raised us with no religion, no constraints, the freedom to find our own passion and bliss. And many years later said she regretted that. It was the worst decision of her life. Now, nobody needs her. She's all alone.
Was she raised that way?
She was very...
It does.
Nobody needs me. No, I bet she was raised in a very controlled environment.
Very controlled.
I've got the vapors.
People go opposite directions. Like, my wife was raised like her mom, and she didn't have a great relationship, and there was a lot of control. And so we've tended to give our daughters more free reign.
Yep.
My mom was a hippie, and I ended up as Alex P. Keaton in my early years. Yeah.
But amazing. Now you're a hippie. Sans the long hair.
I've got both parts now.
Okay.
Yeah.
I loved Alex P. Keaton.
I did, too.
I used to take my books to school in a briefcase.
You did? Were Alex P. Keaton.
On Fridays, I wore a blazer to school. That was not, like, I went to public school. That wasn't a thing. It was my thing.
Oh, my God.
And he had a monocle.
I did not have a monocle. I wasn't Colonel Clay.
Did you have a pen protector?
I did not have a pocket, although my father is an engineer. There were plenty in the house.
I didn't think it was possible, but I love you even more.
But the first time you have an ink pen go bad on you in a blue, then you want the pocket protector. You really do.
Yeah. I get it. We would not have been friends in school.
So we got you to Sarah Lawrence.
I did the theater program in school.
You did?
I did, yeah.
Tell me about it.
No, we're talking about you. I still want to know about Tommy Ford, but we're going to get
the co-host. He was a musician. he's probably still bartending. So shout out to Tommy Ford in Chicago. Are you still working at Shelter?
What did you love about Tommy?
I was 16. He was a musician. He was beautiful. I thought he might be a vampire because he only came out at night.
Yeah. And you were okay with that.
He was just a bartender.
Yeah.
I wasn't looking for a blazer and a pen protector. I was looking for a vampire with a Kamigia.
I had a Kamigia. I bet I wasn't.
Joe Smith has a Kamigia. Yep. But Tommy was much older than me, and because we met at a show, a Julian Cope show, we met at the Riviera, and I was hanging out at nightclubs because I was a precocious young Chicago girl. We both lied about our age.
Fake ID.
I didn't need one.
He was 50 and he said he was 30.
That's right. Yes.
So cut to the end, spoiler alert.
Sorry.
Basically, came home from college, Christmas break, sat at a bar, and he was like, I've been lying to you the whole time.
How long had you been together?
I thought it was odd that on my 16th birthday, we were on the phone And he said, how old are you? And I said, 16. And the phone dropped. Remember those old phones? Like, I heard it.
Actually fell to the ground.
Yes. But he was such a jokester. I was like,
So how old was he really?
He was turning 32 when I was 18.
Oh, my goodness.
And how
was
old did
he married?
You think he was?
No, he wasn't married. I thought he was like 24. Yeah. Okay. So it made new sense now because he used to pick me up from high school in his Karma Ghia. And he said, I feel really uncomfortable sitting out here waiting for you.
Yeah, I bet. He's not supposed to be within 50 yards of the school.
Wow, Melanie's dad has a Karma Ghia.
Ooh, why are they making out in the car?
That's weird.
Gosh, I did not think we would end up here. Just for anyone who doesn't know, I am not drinking alcohol, and somehow we're ending
up. You can't see the air quotes.
My 16-year-old love of my life. Yeah, so I thought I'd go. I thought our life would be together. He wrote songs about me.
Aww.
I was an artist. I was doing the arts program. We had a final project. A couple of my friends had ended up in a psych ward. I don't know. So I'd made an altarpiece to Insanity art project, and he did the music. It was a cross. Anyways, I'm getting weird.
No, this is fascinating.
No, this is really good stuff.
I feel like we can cover another hour right on Tommy Ford. Thank you for sharing that.
Suffice it to say that it didn't work out with you and Tommy.
Yeah.
Sarah Lawrence saved me.
I
ended up in New York at a liberal arts school with just... It was like heaven on earth. It was fabulous. It was just artists living and talking art. Everywhere you went was an amazing conversation about philosophy or art or what are you working on. I started welding because I had fallen in love with mechanics and I wanted to take all the old car pieces and weld them together into sculptures.
Now, you said your mom raised you really to be super independent, and then she regretted it because she felt like you didn't need her. But Sarah Lawrence is, you had to be so... self-directed. Did you thrive in it? I'm like, was that the perfect environment
perfect.
For
it? Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect.
So you loved that kind of set your own boundaries.
Yes, but or don't.
Or not.
Or no, but
which direction did you go?
Do you have to ask?
No, I think we have our answer.
I think I learned very young in life. I grew up in a place in Chicago. I don't know if either of you are familiar with Chicago, but there's a street.
Miracle Mile, I know.
Little bit.
So I live right by Miracle Mile.
Okay.
Division Street.
Oh, yeah,
State
sure.
Rush, which is now called Viagra Triangle.
It wasn't before I was there, but...
It wasn't. So my dad had saloons and restaurants in that area. And
so there's a Gibson Steakhouse.
Yes. Not,
yes, yes.
It's right there. So my dad had Melvin's and the Waterfront, and those were... all. Waterfront was right across from where Gibson's is.
Yeah.
Had a lobster tank in the window. So I grew up in a very precocious, no-boundary environment where I would be walking home from grade school, and bars would be like, come on in, have a free drink. And I'm like 10.
Yes,
like,
I mean, and.
Yes, and.
Like, okay. So really learning through going full throttle anywhere I wanted to go at any time. It confused me going to friends' houses when they had rules. What do you mean?
What do you mean we can't do that?
We can't smoke in the room.
Is it just this
when
room?
You have to go to bed at a certain time.
Oh, should I go out in the backyard for my cigarette?
We can't go to your parents' liquor cabinet? Well, that's bizarre. That's... Why don't we just go to my house where we can do all that stuff? So I already had the no rules, no boundaries. And then it's like at Sarah Lawrence, it's just, what do you mean you have philosophy at 7 a.m.? I feel like I'd be much better philosophizing at 3 a.m. Like at 7 a.m., I'm just, my brain hasn't kicked in yet. So it's just getting a schedule. That was the difficult part. But it was fantastic.
And at this point in your life, were you tunnel vision? This is where I'm going. This is the rest of my life. This is what I'm going to do.
In terms of theater?
No.
In terms of
art, theater, that you were going to be a creative for the rest of your life.
Oh, I can't help but be a creative. I believe we're all creating ourselves until we die. I believe everyone's an artist and everyone's an art piece. I believe that 1,000%. But at that particular time in my life, I did come across a little existential crisis because there were other people at the college who were like, they knew what they wanted to do. They knew what they wanted to be.
Yeah.
And I remember asking people, like, how did you figure it out? How do you know? And they're like, oh, just the thing you've done the longest. And I'm like, okay, drugs? Is there a future?
Doesn't seem like the path
seems,
I should be going
seems
down.
Seems short-sighted like that.
Will someone pay me to do this?
That's right.
Yes, theaters will.
Is that, I don't know that they're paying, they're subsidizing. Perhaps. We're checking on time.
Because
at some point, in a few moments, let's just do it right now.
Well, it's been 20 minutes since she's cried, so let's get this done so we can come back.
We're going to take a very quick break. We're going to hear from our sponsor, the McCallum Theater. Speaking of creatives, one of the great creative spots in all of the Coachella Valley, and you can find out more about their ongoing season at McCallumTheater.org.
Paul Anka live at the McCallum Theater, January 2nd through 4th. Experience all the hits, including
Put Your Head on Mine
and many more. Join us for an intimate evening filled with the legendary songs behind a seven-decade career. See an icon live on stage. Get your tickets now at McCallumTheater.org.
And we're back. Oh, our thanks to the McCallum Theater. And by the way, this portion of the program is brought to you by the McCallum Theater. Again, McCallumTheater.org. And be sure to support them. They've got a great Muses and Patroness thing coming up on March the 2nd that's going to be amazing, and that supports the education program. So kudos to them because they're bringing in 40,000 kids from across the Coachella Valley, and it's terrific.
It's been an incredible season.
Because you
for
never
them,
know
too.
When there's going to be a young, budding Melanie Blue in the audience who's going to see something on the McCallum Theater stage and turn into her.
There you go.
So,
and say, I want to do that. I think I can do that.
We're back with Melanie Blue, who is, I mean, we went down a rabbit hole with Tommy
Sorry.
Ford. But and wherever you are, Tommy, we appreciate your...
We do.
We wrap it up
well,
in
let's
episode
see, like,
three,
Tommy was already a lot older than you, so maybe, like, he's probably retired.
You would think so.
But all right, so you're in the arts program, Sarah Lawrence. Mm-hmm. And
doing theater.
Doing theater and loving it.
Loving it.
What took you over to the dark side of improv?
One day an improv teacher came and taught because we had a well-rounded, all different components to our theater program. I did a directing component. And one day it was an improv. And I'm a pretty upbeat, happy-go-lucky kind of person. And this one particular day, for whatever reason, I was not. And I remember this teacher telling us to just get on stage. She said, get on stage. I'm like, ugh. And I went up there and I was like, I don't even know what you want me to do. I didn't even want to get out of bed today. And she said, that is all you need. Just speak from where you're at. And I was like,
wow.
That's all. Wait, no, I can do that. That's amazing. And then life happened and I graduated and I ended up in India and traveling around Europe and yada yada.
Well, you can't yada past to India and Europe. What were you doing?
Tommy and I went to 35 countries and yada yada.
That's right.
I can't get a thing past you guys.
He does this for a living.
There's a reason we've had 150 of these episodes. I get to the truth. I'm like Leslie Stahl with a less attractive skirt.
Yeah, and I'm more like Leslie Jones.
He's like Morley Safer.
Dead?
She doesn't even know who Morley Safer is.
I don't know.
They were on 60 Minutes a long time ago.
Back when it was 45 minutes.
But Morley Safer's 60 Minutes ran out. That was when they shot it in black and white. So anyway,
I landed back in Chicago.
Wait, no, India. What were you doing in India?
Remember I said that I took that religion class and I studied about cultism? And
you started a cult.
And I did start a cult.
That is so cool.
But I decided to go visit someone else's cult.
Oh, okay.
In India, because I'd done a lot of studying on Rajneesh, who became Osho.
Yep.
Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh.
I've got his books and his cards.
You do?
I do.
So
I've
cute.
I've got the Osho cards.
So cute. The tarot cards?
Yeah, I look at first day of the month every month. This month was Weasel.
Wow, Randy.
On the one I drew.
Wow. That's amazing.
Weasel, you say.
I guarantee you it's not meaning anything that you're applying to it right now.
I'm sure it's not. So you were over there.
I lived in his commune for 6 months.
What?
My
In Pune.
Tara's closest friends were in his commune. We'll talk another
time. We'll talk. My sister is deep into it, and I did a lot of studies in college of why people follow cults, and specifically with Rajneesh, because he had an older, more educated, more professional following.
Yes.
It wasn't a lot of lost teenagers. It was people at the height of their field. So I did.
And Randy.
There has to be a token failure in every group.
That was a cheap shot.
No, but the good thing is I never got any better, so I could come back to every class.
Oh, that's good.
That was also a mecca of just spiritual dynamic, just phenomenal. It was the time of my life, 21, in India, with my own little scooter that I crashed 3 times. We're skipping past that.
You must love the Marigold movies. The best little Marigold hotel. And do you watch movies?
I do, but...
Then never mind.
Okay.
I can tell they're your favorite.
Have you ever seen Zoolander? Randy really likes
no,
Zoolander.
No, but Randy invited me over for it. Am I supposed to accept? He
said no. Something.
Whatever you do, no.
You'd be the first.
He mentioned something about submarines. Is that...
All of the secrets are coming out.
Let's get back to you.
That's right. Randy said nervously. This might be the one episode his wife listens to.
She might hear this one. On the other hand, that's how I met her. Everything we're talking about, that's how we met.
Your
like
wife?
Rajneesh, Osho?
No.
Oh.
Submarines.
Zoolander.
She said yes when I asked her. No. Let's go back to Osho.
Yeah, so you're studying cults. How long were you in India?
6 months.
Phenomenal.
And then I know.
Did you go from India to Europe?
I went from India to Europe. I landed in Paris. I had a couple $100 on me, and I thought, even if I just have one great night in Paris, I'm getting off the plane. 6 months later.
You know how to stretch a buck. That's great.
How to stretch a buck.
You didn't run into Tommy, did you?
I can't get out of the airport in Paris for $200.
It was a long time ago. And yeah, I had a stretch of luck that brought me through Paris, Switzerland, Germany, lived in Spain for a while, went back up to Paris for a while, and ended up back in Chicago. Got back on the plane. Remember they had the year-round open return tickets? That's what it was.
Oh, back in the day.
Back in the day. Yeah. Jumped back on the plane, got back to Chicago, and...
What an amazing adventure. I love that.
I know.
What?
So many stories.
I love people who can do that.
Yeah.
Just, okay, I'm getting better at that, but I wish that when I were younger, I could have just been like, yeah, let's just figure out what's going on here for a while.
Yeah.
And it'll be okay. But I was never, I was always... insecure about, is it going to be like, I don't know how long this $200 is going to last, so.
And it went. I had everything robbed from me twice.
Oh,
I smuggled drugs from Amsterdam to make more money. I got ripped off with that. Stuff happened. I worked illegally in a cafe in Spain.
How do you do that?
You just
they don't know you work there? You just show up and start serving people?
Not knowing you work there. They knew.
Why is that woman
here? Certain Spaniards knew.
It's funny what you said, though, because I think we've gone opposite. Like, you started without a pocket protector, but with a briefcase.
Well, I did have a briefcase.
A blazer on Fridays and scared to make those jumps, but you're moving more into being able to make them. Whereas I feel like jumped, and I'm, oh, I don't.
Do you crave the stability?
It's not that I crave stability, but now, like when I plan traveling, I want to know where I'm staying. I know I can exist for a year traveling around the world, jumping on and off trains in my 20s and meet people, but now I also know, oh, shit can go weird. You learn the lessons, and I don't think a lot of them I would want to learn again.
That I understand. Yeah.
Although they turned now, you into who you are sitting here today.
Absolutely.
And that
100%.
Was my question. How does all of that inform who you are today?
In every single way. I wouldn't.
No fear?
Oh, everybody has fear.
I think it's not about, not having fear. It's about having fear and doing it anyways.
Courage.
Right? You walk through
Working
it anyways.
Through the fear.
You just go step by step. Don't let fear stop you. Hold your fear, know your fear, and walk forward anyways. Right?
Yeah.
What would you identify as your fear?
I used to have an enormous fear of success. I've been working through that one for with this improv empire I'm creating.
What does that look like? Because I've always had, I don't quite understand a fear of success. So how did that show up in you?
I feel I sabotaged myself a lot. I feel I would get really close to something really awesome and
just couldn't accept it.
Do something really stupid.
And you knew you were doing it.
No, I didn't consciously. It's like a hindsight.
Oh, okay.
Being late for that meeting, for that movie series. Just strolling in an hour later, stoned.
Come to think of it, I should have talked to that guy at Netflix. Shouldn't have blown that off.
So busy doing this or that. But yeah, I think it's more of a hindsight. I think terrified of success. That's what I love about our little valley here.
So how did you end up in the Coachella Valley?
Yeah.
Yeah, how?
Tom, was it Tommy?
No. Tommy's a bartender. I would have met him by now. If he was here.
He's a Johnny Costas.
No, he's not.
I ran away from L.A. from a toxic relationship, and I ran here to the Betty Ford Center to take care of my drug addiction and codependency, and that was 10 and a half years ago.
Congratulations.
And I've
what
was been that here ever since.
What, if you don't want to talk, we usually ask before we start, but we don't want to talk about
it. I don't mind. I just didn't want
to. What was that experience like going to Betty Ford?
Oh. At that time, it was fantastic. To be clear, on my journey, I had also had a lot of recovery time before that, and I had run my own treatment center in Nevada, so I have a lot of experience in the field. And then I got in this toxic relationship, had a bit of a relapse that lasted for a couple years, and I was in L.A., and my mom kept saying, go to Betty Ford. And I was like, Mom, I'm a counselor. I've
got
this.
I know what they're going to say.
I'm going to take care of myself. I've helped millions of people. I'm gonna...
You go to Betty Ford, Mom.
And she kept saying it. Things kept getting worse. I didn't really know where Betty Ford was. So I got a ride to Palmdale.
That's not it. It's a long walk.
Really long.
I was told
really
it was closer than that.
I was like, Palm Springs, Palmdale. Spent a little while there telling my mom, no, I'm fine. I'm in the Motel 6. It's much cheaper. We're just going to do it here. And she said, go to Betty Ford. So what was it like when I arrived? I was wearing bunny ears. And I had everything I owned. And I was in detox. And as one of my dear friends pointed out, she said, you were the most positive person there. You were crying, but you were so happy to be there. And I called my mom and I was like, thank you so much. How did you know? She was like, I didn't. It was just like the closest place to you. I just needed to get you somewhere.
Wow.
And it was exactly what I needed when I needed it. Now, I came with a little bit of ego. No, this is what I do for a living. And I'm not doing the 12 steps, and I'm not doing this, and I do it this way. And they were like, okay, do. And within a week or two, I came in, and I was like, I surrender. Whatever you need me to do, this isn't, I don't got it. I don't know. I obviously can't help myself. And I stayed there inpatient for 30 days, and I lived outpatient for 60 days. And then I did a sober living for another 90 days, and then I started managing a sober living house, and then I started working at Betty Ford. And started, because I had run a treatment center before, I didn't really want to be in charge of anything anymore.
Makes sense.
So I worked as a receptionist, and I got to put people on hold and transfer them to people when they were upset. But I soon worked under the tutelage of a wonderful man, Mitch Reynolds, and he pulled me up. He was in charge of volunteers, the front desk, transportation, and sober living. And he trained me to be his right arm, and we ran those departments together, and it was a beautiful...
Wow.
And all those skills came in handy...
I bet.
In what I'm doing now.
Yeah.
So back to your, everything I've ever done in life has brought, and you don't know. You don't know when you're doing it, how it's going to become.
Till you look back. Yeah.
Everything I've ever done has made me a teacher, has made me an improviser, has made me an actress, has made me my crying, my laughing, my empathy, my experiences, my near-death experiences, my near-life experiences, all of it. comes folded in and becomes the omelet that is Melanie Blue you see here today.
But not everybody has, I think, the wherewithal or the capability to harness all of that. Like, clearly, I think you do. You're very much a big picture person. You look back on all of these things and you see how they factor in. I don't know that everybody has that. I don't know that I have that ability. And I think that's a really remarkable ability.
Thank you.
I would agree with that. Yeah. Do you have a sense for what you've meant to this, the theater community in this town? Because everybody knows Melanie Blue. Somehow or the other, everybody's been in a class or they've worked with you. I can't talk to anybody and mention your name and not just hear amazing things.
You made her cry again.
I'm really bad at compliments. No, I have no idea. Thank you.
No, you do have this. I will tell you this. So at one of our previous guests here on Big Conversation Little Bar, my good friend Ron Oliver, who directs a lot of, he directs films for Hallmark, writes and directs films for Netflix. He was the number one film on Netflix.
Yes, he was. Yeah, Christmas movie.
He and I always have, we get together periodically, but we always have a Christmas gift exchange, and we just had that last. And he, we're sitting there having a drink, and he's like, I hear you've been taking improv classes. So people know. And beyond just, like, the local theater community. Because Ron's not a, he is a theater guy, but he's a movie guy. But, like, all of a sudden he knew that I was taking your class, which kind of freaked me out. Like, why do you know that?
You did mention it on air.
I did, yeah, but that is true.
Not that mysterious. Yeah.
Somebody listened? We never assumed that anybody's heard.
As Ron would say, Sir Ron doesn't watch broadcast television. But no. But anyway, like, clearly your reputation precedes. Talk about.
It's hard to see yourself through other people's eyes. It's hard to know your own reputation. I would hearken back to you saying you thought you could walk into a class and know no one.
Well, I certainly hoped.
It's the lack of awareness we have about how we are perceived and the impact and ripples we make. So, yeah, no, I have no idea. I still feel like...
newbie in town?
Like that little girl who was scared to say, yes, I'll take an acting class. Yeah. But now I know it's my happiest place in the world. Now I know I just put myself where my soul is happy. I'm really happy teaching. And I'm really happy in rehearsals. And I just started directing. And I'm really happy directing.
Now,
I just
keep leaning into, oh, that feels really good for my soul. I'm going to do more of that. And how lucky we are in life to be able to do that now. I feel like I've lived a long life and...
You've packed a lot in.
I had no clue.
Packed a lot in.
I was going to say, that's a short
You didn't have... did you have India on that list?
Is Tom Ford on there?
Tommy Ford was not on his list, I guarantee
you. When we talk to him next week.
Yeah, he's going to be our next guest. Next week, Tom Ford. Directing seems natural for you because I feel like when you're teaching, you do a lot of directing... When people come to your class, and again, they have weird ideas about what improv is. So you have to break people down and take away these preconceived notions. So you do a bit of directing every class for, and they're a couple of hours. It's a lot of work goes into that.
Yes, 100%. And if you ever go past level one...
I'm not past level one yet.
No.
Oh, Jesus.
Through level one.
You keep taking the same class.
I'm level 0.5.
I keep taking the same class.
And I love it.
Is level two my invitation? What do I have to do? I'm not there yet.
It's just whatever fits in your schedule always happens to be like, and we're starting with our adjectives and our names.
Yes, and. By the way.
Yes.
Your improv advice.
Yes.
I would tell people this. And maybe you've been married for 46 years.
Almost, yeah.
Improv advice is good marriage advice.
Good marriage advice.
Yes, and.
Yes, and.
There are times where, in my marriage, my wife will say, I was thinking about, and you just think, yes, and.
It really is the easier, softer way. Not just on stage, in marriage, in life. You don't have to think too hard.
It's,
yes.
I would encourage everybody to take an improv class. And if they can, take yours. But because it is so applicable, it's applicable to what I do on my regular job. Mm-hmm. It's applicable here, but it's applicable in a lot of places in life.
And let's test your knowledge, because it's not just saying yes. What are the other things?
I don't know. I missed the last four classes. You know that.
Yeah, but that was all in class three.
I know.
And I wasn't there. So
yes, and it's trusting your partner.
Listening.
Listening
helps a marriage. Am I right?
100%.
And making them look good. Make
always
your
make
partner
always make them
look
good.
Look good.
Which is terrific.
If they're dead wrong and going left, yes, darling.
And go with it.
This is exactly the way we're supposed to be going right now. And I love you.
So take an improv. If your marriage is on the rocks, take an improv class.
And if not, just stop at yes.
Said I have worked with husbands and wives. I put them in different classes, but their marriage goes much better.
I read that you did corporate work.
Yes, I do, and I did, and I do.
Can you talk about that? What's that look like?
It's
a lot of guys in suits.
It's a lot of guys in suits.
So it's Mad
Men. With pen protectors. And I make them do the same things that we do in class with more of... It depends. I curate with the people. I've done groups of 100. I've done conferences. I did the financial conference a couple years ago. I've done a couple golf companies that come out here that their salesmen need to be better at presenting.
Right.
So I have worked with individual presentational skills and group dynamics of making some kind of a gathering more comfortable and playful. I've worked from all size groups in all kinds of businesses. I love it.
When you get this kind of group of suits.
Yes.
Like in our class, everybody wanted to be there. We all wanted to take improv. Are they resistive? Is it harder?
I've been through 1,000 of those in my banking career.
Oh, that's right.
And
you were a very corporate banker.
How did you get those people to take the stick out of their butt after a half an hour? Because they don't.
Everybody metaphorically, of course.
Whatever.
Whatever.
I know those meetings, and everybody's, I'm not doing that. How do you get them going?
I think it's the same tenets that I use in my first class. Just make a super safe environment with a little bit of silliness so that everybody can be comfortable being a little silly in front of each other. And allow them to drink.
I seldom drink before your class. Often after, but seldom.
In corporate.
That's why I left the class. We weren't allowed to drink.
No. In corporate, you have to let them know. That's what the whole thing is.
Yeah.
It's a drinking boondoggle, but you got to throw them an exercise or two.
You've got to let them. They're so scared when they hear improv that sometimes I'll call it improv mindset workshop. I trick them into it. I'm pretty good at the tricky lessons, at sneaking a lesson in, at playing a silly game, and then, oh, we just learned something. So I start them with silliness and move into hardcore facts.
You're an idiot.
There's a hardcore fact.
My biggest skill set is my ability to improvise and pivot and meet them where they're at and do what the group needs me to do in the moment. You get a feeling. These people want to learn something. These people just want to laugh.
All right. So where did your skill about reading the room, where did you learn that? Or is that just an intuitive thing?
I read once, I've read like it's a... Empathetic.
And Melanie's back.
Hey, can you hear me? Testing.
Our guest today is Melanie Blue.
Hi, so happy to be here. I was nervous about this all week, but I think it's going to go really good.
Yeah, we'll see.
You have a list of questions you need to ask me?
No. My wife.
I've heard it comes from traumatic childhoods where you just are so... have to take the barometer of the room to know whether what you're doing is okay or not.
Did you have that traumatic? Because it sounded like you said your dad owned bars and restaurants and your mom was melodramatic, but were there times where you had to wonder what was going on in the room, walk on eggshells, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I don't know where it came from. I feel like we can all look at our lives in two different ways. I can sometimes tell you the horror stories and sometimes tell you the joy stories, and both of them are true. Yeah. And they both created a memory, a past that can be created into lore or created into myth. Were there troubles? Yeah.
Got troubles too.
We all got troubles.
Which I've had a few.
I guess too few to mention. See, I knew that reference.
So you won multi awards in this town for acting, correct?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
She said she doesn't take compliments.
I just wanted to make sure that I made that.
Oh, I don't think that's me.
What kind of parts are you attracted to, and what have been your favorite parts that you've done?
Tommy Ford's parts.
Tommy's got some great parts.
I will never live this down. I'm sorry, JoJo. I love you.
Yes, with all apologies to your significant other. Pay no attention to what's going on here.
Currently with a wonderful man, a codependency counselor, Joe Boss. Call him. He can help you. He helped me. My favorite role is every role I've ever done. Honest to God, I have been cast perfectly so many times. So I leapt into the desert theater scene with Clark Gable Slept Here, and I auditioned for one role, and the director said, "Can you speak Spanish?" And I said, "Nope." And he said, "But can you, like, learn it?" I was like, "I could try." He said, "Bring back a monologue. Bring back this Spanish monologue next week." And I did. And it was my first gig in a long time, so I worked really hard. And I ended up playing the Spanish maid, speaking an entire first three quarters of the play in Spanish. And then it turns out I'm not. I've been faking it the whole time, that character. And
that's unbelievable.
Since then, I've gotten every accented role.
That's phenomenal.
That's awesome.
Every comedic role, I've just been cast so phenomenally well.
But that's such a skill. I'm so impressed.
Me too. I've only done it three times, and I play me every single time.
Really?
So, yeah.
Randy has a trouble with the English speaking parts.
I'm so bad at memorizing, I've forgotten my name like five times. So.
Got to come back to improv class. It will help you with your acting. It really does.
Yeah.
So you've been doing Georgia O'Keeffe.
I've been doing Georgia O'Keeffe. We just started rehearsals last night.
I think by the time the podcast drops, the production, you may miss it. But tell us about...
When are we coming out?
Right now, for the people listening. Yeah. We're out.
We're out, and we're here.
We're here,
and
we're live.
Thank you for listening to us.
By the time you guys hear this, it's probably taped about 3 weeks ago.
Okay, January 23rd is when we open.
Oh, no. I think we might make
it. And we're promoting it.
Great, let's promote it. It's fantastic.
Go see Melanie as Georgia O'Keeffe.
I was at the Table Read last night, and this cast is superb.
And that's for The Bent?
It's for Desert Ensemble Theater, written by Rich Rubin, who wrote Kafka's Joke a few years back, and Desert Ensemble produced that. Jerome is directing it. Charles Herrera is Alfred Stieglitz. Hmm. I've got two of my improv students, Lisa Hammert and Ray Kelly, who you know.
I know Ray's great, yeah.
Yes, Ray's fantastic.
He was like your assistant.
He
was the teacher's pet.
I remember him.
I got to train people to take over the empire for days I'm busy.
The empire.
Running off to India.
Looking for Tommy.
No, she's not anymore looking for Tommy.
Yeah, let's be clear about that.
Let's be clear about that, JoJo.
Thank you so much. We love you so much. I don't even know who Tommy is. We'll talk later. The Georgia plays about a very specific time in her life.
We're still going to talk about Tommy no matter what you do with the mic.
That's right.
She had a love affair with Alfred Stieglitz that lasted a lifetime, and he was many years her senior, I think 23. They were both geniuses, and they stayed together, which is a very strange thing. That's what we were talking to the playwright Rich Rubin about last night. That was one of the things that interested him about this, was that two complete geniuses in their field and the relationship they had for so long. And he has so many affairs. And she's living in Taos, and he's living in New York, but she loved him. And his question last night was, why didn't she leave him? And to me, there was such a creative respect and understanding that he could see. There's letters between the two of them where they talk about their art and what they're going through, and she just knew he was greatness. So I studied improv in Chicago with Del Close, who was greatness.
He kind of started the whole thing,
and we had a love relationship, unromantic, but completely creatively in love with each other. And that I bring into Georgia and Alfred, that wow. understanding of a mentor, a person who can take you under their wing and say, what you are doing is amazing. I knew I could get up on stage in front of Dell, improv, and say anything. And the whole room could fall silent because I had some weird stories. And he's in the back going, because he would get it. He would get it. And so I did a lot. He directed me in every show he did once we met. So that creative love, taking a person under your wing and knowing their hearts and knowing their arts.
It goes back to what you teach about trust. Trusting your partner, trusting the audience, trusting the people you're working with. It's really, it breeds that creativity. It allows, I think it gives it room to breathe.
And that's why it's one of my favorite places to be in a theater, that safety of knowing everything in here is allowed, everything is for art.
I will tell you, and I don't know, maybe Randy feels the same. I mean, you've been dabbling more in acting, and I've just been dipping my toe in the improv thing. But one of the things I learned early on, and I think it luckily we've had really good classes, but when you first walk in, you don't feel like it's safe because you don't know the people. But then after about two classes, it really does begin to feel super safe because they're all taking the same risks.
Yes.
And so that's what I loved about the class. And one of the things, and you missed it, but we had a gentleman in the last class who was a professor of theater. And I figured, what is he doing in a beginner's improv class? But it was remarkable to work with him. I really enjoyed we got to do a couple of things together, but just watching him, but he was soaking it up too. And here's a guy who's been teaching for probably 30 plus years.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's just a very cool environment. You make it a safe place for people to be. Love it. Don't cry. Because if you cry, I'll cry. I'm not crying. You're crying.
Thank you.
I can't wait to start it again. Thank I really can't. I feel now like I understand what it will do for me as I try to do more in acting.
It really does next level your acting. Yeah. They so go hand in hand. And you're 100% correct. I direct. I'm teaching an acting class. I'm calling it improv.
And I got it. I believed you.
All right. And this is in time as well. You're going to be starting another class in
February.
Okay.
I don't have dates yet. I just know that I have to get through Georgia. I'm doing the Georgia and I'm directing one of the 10-minute things at the Revolution. So for the next kind of 6 to 8 weeks, I'm in production for these things. I will continue. Two of my classes will be continuing and three have been put on hold. And then I'll add another one. So I'll have those classes that have stopped, restart, and then I have a list to start a new class. So it's just juggling dates, figuring out, of course, when Patrick's free.
Oh, yes. Planning around that. Yeah.
And when Randy's free, okay. And then I'll have some dates. I'll come stop by again with you and let you know all about that.
You can look for Melanie on the Eye in the Desert. But look for her as Georgia O'Keefe at Desert Ensemble. That's going to be phenomenal, and I can't wait for February. I so enjoy these classes, and I learn so much, and it's really nice at 59 to walk back into an environment where I feel like I'm learning stuff, and I think it's really important.
I think so, too. And I think that's amazing.
Isn't it really nice to be doing it with a really nice person, too?
Well, I'm doing it with Melanie.
Your rate just went up. No, you walk into that room, you feel your personality. So thank you for that.
Thank you, Randy.
Yeah. No, it's...
Thanks a lot, Patrick.
Bastard.
Wow. It is remarkable. And I really encourage people, if you've thought about doing it and you're thinking, I don't know, do it. Take the risk because it is so much fun. You will learn a lot. And no matter what you're doing, even if you're just retired and sitting around the house, it's a great way. First, you'll meet some really fun people.
Yeah.
You'll also, it surprised me the people I knew in the class who were doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Because people in their role, in their silo, and then you all get to break out of that.
Yes.
That's what I love.
That was super fun for me. So
yeah, I think I hit on a couple of really important things. Some people just want to get out of their living room and come and Sunday and laugh. And some people are looking for a community, and we have that. Each class has its own little community that gets created where they're like, we don't want to stop. So they continue on. There's a class that you started in May that kept going till November because they just, your class, the one you...
The one you dropped out of, Randy.
The community that
once
forms...
Once I left, everybody felt like you could just keep going.
Everybody was like,
this
he's
is
gone.
Really fun now.
It felt much safer.
But if you're looking for a sense of community, if you're looking to learn something where everybody is just starting out and playing together and doesn't know what they're doing, it's a safe place to do that. I play guitar because I don't have to be good. Because I'm just learning and I have a horrible strum. I worked with an old blues player in Chicago who's like, Mel, it's all about the strum. I'm like, I don't have a strum. But I don't ever have to do this for anyone. I can just sit, and my JoJo boss has bought me microphones and an amp so I can sit in what I call the Tone Deaf Cafe and sing my little heart out. So trying something new and being a novice at it is part of the human experience. It's part of something that makes us walk through our fear, evolve our spirit, and play.
Wouldn't this world be better if everybody was taking Melanie's improv classes?
100%.
I love that.
And you will learn things that will be applicable to whatever you do. It really, honestly, it opens up a world and gets you more in touch with yourself. Also allows you to get in touch with others. The whole idea of yes and trust, like, that is so applicable in other parts of your life as well.
Everywhere. Yeah. Like you
and
said.
And had I known there was that much touching...
There's a lot of touching.
I would have been back.
Yeah, you missed all the really, no, there was some good stuff that came out of it.
This was such a blast.
Melanie, you were
thank
terrific.
You. Thank
we
you.
Love you.
We love you. Thank you.
We've been so excited about this episode. And honestly, it exceeded my very high expectations because you were so lovely. Such
thank
a wonderful
you.
Person.
You guys made it really comfortable. I was scared.
Oh, well, I'm fine. We were scared. You made it comfortable for us, so thank you.
We were all scared and did it anyway. We
most importantly, you all made it comfortable for Leo.
Yeah, Leo.
A steadfast audience member. Yeah.
Thank you.
Again, our thanks to the McCallum Theater. Our thanks to Skip Page and his entire team here at a little bar. Drop by, have a drink, have the best cheeseburger in town.
And tip big.
Tip huge. Yeah. And say, by the way, we're only here because we listen to Big Conversations.
Oh, I like that.
Be sure to subscribe so you never miss another episode of Big Conversations Little Bar, available wherever you get your podcast. On behalf of Randy Florence, our guest Melanie Blue, I'm Patrick Evans. Thank you so much for listening.
Thank you.
Big Conversations, Little Bar, is a production of the Mutual Broadcasting System. This podcast is available in audio and video format. Visit our website at www.bigconversationslittlebar.com. New episodes are released every Monday.
Big conversations, little bar.